Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 149 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of May 12th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is Playground Adjacent Dan Ryan.
I don't know how I feel about that one. Like, am I like a playground or am I kind of creepily near a playground?
You're just near a playground. You're on the second floor and the playground is on the first floor near where you are.
I think I care for that. Playground adjacent. More like
it's an indoor playground.
You see.
Our guest gets it. And tonight we're joined by special guest, one of the proprietors of my local game store, Level Up Entertainment, Mr. Sean Rothwell.
Hi there.
We're going to spend a little time with Sean tonight talking about what it's like running an independent game store in this day and age. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So we only have a limited time with Sean this evening, so we're going to go forego our usual bullshitting session and jump right into things. Sean, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I own a local game shop, like Chris said. I have done this for 10 years now. We opened in 2007 with my partner, Greg Mester, who could not join us tonight. But we specialize in comic books, video games, specifically retro games. We do sell new games, although less of that than we used to. We also do toys and collectibles, you know, the usual.
And it is quite nice. I've talked about your sheer store on my show, on this show, your store on our show. Pronouns are hard.
Well, thank you.
On the show many a time. Now you had this is coming based off of a conversation I was having with Sean one of the weeks when I came to pick up my comics, and he was talking about just some of the weirdness of how difficult it is to get product in his store. Now, you just mentioned that you do less new stuff than you used to do. Give us kind of a rundown on why that is and what exactly it's like trying to get new product into an independent video game store.
Sure. So when we first opened back in 2007, we opened accounts with a couple of different local video game distributors. There's not too many out there, but we went with a couple of big ones, Mecha Electronics out of Long Island, Alliance Games, and I believe it was Big Brother World. I don't even know if they're still around, but we don't use Alliance or Big Brother anymore. And originally, when we first opened, we needed to fill the store. So we had our loan and a lot of money, and we said we want this was so 2007 again. We want Wii's, we want Xbox 360s and PlayStation 3s, and we want everything that comes with all of these things, PSPs, all that. And they were like, yeah, sure, no problem. So we gave them a lot of money, and they sent us everything we asked for. And we're like, this is going to be great. So we'll get everything we want.
Yay!
So our second shipment came – right. Our second shipment came along, and we're like, we're out of Wii's. We need more. And they're like, yeah, well, sorry. And – that kind of became sort of the theme of how it would go from then on out. Like, if you had $20,000 to drop in an order, you got what you wanted. If you only had like $1,000 or $2,000, you pretty much had to hope that they had enough scraps left over for you. And we were, when we opened, I don't know if you guys can remember as far back as 2007, 2008, but we kind of had that financial meltdown happen.
Yeah, a bit. It was, a couple people mentioned it, like here and there.
Yeah, you know, it was a bit of a blip. But,
yeah,
a little bit. So we, you know, like we were in a hard hit area in South Jersey, and, you know, we struggled through it, but we managed to make it work. But, you know, we did not have the influx of customers that we would hope to maintain that level to get the things that we needed. So pretty much ever since we opened, we've been struggling to get like the hot properties, like Nintendo products. And pretty much everything Nintendo makes is a struggle, from games to hardware, especially hardware. And, you know, most titles, like, for new releases are not a big deal, but we still do have timing issues with, you know, midnight releases, they're pretty much done. We can't do them anymore because they don't get the products early enough for us to have them in time. We used to be able to get them like the day before and then have them ready to go. And that is definitely a thing of the past.
That's really brutal. I mean, especially, so you guys are located in a mall and there's a GameStop, like what, three stores down from you guys?
Yep. And they actually have started doing 9 p.m. the day before releases. I don't know if you're aware of this.
I'm not aware of that. That's
probably shouldn't advertise for GameStop on this, but
oh, don't worry, you're in no danger of earning them any business.
No, we will certainly walk those customers right back out the door.
So yeah, like we definitely can't even compete with that now. Yeah, they'll do the day before releases, and it kind of like how movies have crept into Thursday.
Yeah,
there's no longer like midnight releases; it's Thursday afternoon. Yeah, so we've pretty much given up on new releases for the most part, except for Nintendo titles. People still come to us for Nintendo stuff, and even that's become increasingly difficult to get. Like we got Mario Kart for the Switch, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and that worked out pretty well. But like Binding of Isaac was a no go. What else?
Has Been Heroes.
Yeah, that didn't happen. They just didn't have any.
You guys just got your first shipment of Bomberman in, right?
Yep, that just happened. 2 weeks ago. Yeah, with Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm. And so, you still haven't seen any Pro Controllers. Ago.
No Pro Controllers. Yeah, accessories are pretty much non-existent for us, at least first-party ones right now.
That's brutal. Now, you had, and the scope obviously goes beyond just Nintendo stuff. You said you were having problems with the new Persona, right?
Yeah, we actually did manage to get that eventually on release week, but not on release day. They just didn't have it. Sometimes, you know, like, and I don't want to throw my distributors under the bus because I got to be honest, like my rep is super cool. You know, he got to know us. He's been my rep for 10 years now, and he'll level with me. Like he'll straight up tell me when it's like, no, I went to the big guys, or no, Nintendo's given us a runaround on it. To give you a little idea how that worked, like for the Switch, I know I talked to you about it, Chris, because you were trying to get one from us, and which I appreciate. We didn't know if we were going to have the Switch at all or any of the launch titles until 4 p.m. the day before. So that was March 2nd.
Jeez.
Wow.
So it's really hard.
That's fun.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to plan a business around that. You know, like, you know, you can't take pre-orders. You can't guarantee things for your customers. You can't like budget because we got two. And they went to some of the people that have been like, helping us out throughout the years, and we're like desperately trying to get more, and it was like it just was impossible to do.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys were straight honest with me. You were like, "I'm so it's just not going to happen here. Your best bet is to pre-order somewhere else," which I did, and that was a whole rigmarole. It's like I got all this store credit at your store.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Hey, it's cool. I won't spend it on comics because there's something clearly wrong with me. I come into your store every couple of weeks and pick up my comics and pay with cash because that store credit is for games.
Yeah, man, it's extremely frustrating because it was always my dream to have a video game store, and you know, I know some places have made it work, and I've talked to some other store owners, but the general consensus these days seems to be that like it is not the business to be in if you want to make money.
Now, do you think that's because of like just production issues or like this? I don't know if you want to say it like falsified demand, right? Like where like, oh, we're not going to make things, so you can't have them, and then people are going to want them. Or like, is that a digital issue, do you think, of like, I don't need to go to my local game store, like even though everybody there is perfectly lovely, I could just sit on my couch in my pants and buy a game?
I think it's both. With Nintendo specifically, it's definitely that artificial scarcity. They don't meet demand.
Thank you. Artificial really scarcity is what I was trying to say, but was not going to find it with a flashlight and a map. So,
Well, it's with Nintendo. We have regular conversations in the store because we're all Nintendo fans because we hate ourselves, and we constantly talk about how frustrating it is. Like the most recent wave of Amiibo were solicited to us, and we're like, okay, we'll take as many as you can give us, and they're like, okay, we'll let you know. So can we get them? Like maybe.
If we like you this week.
But then when it comes to things like Ubisoft's latest releases, like Ghost Recon, the newest one that just came out, I know it was pretty well received, and it was like the top seller the week it came out, but not for us. We moved two copies because I think that's a game people are willing to download.
Right.
Nintendo fans seem to want to collect. You know, they want to come into a store and have a physical copy.
They do.
Plus, Nintendo makes it really difficult to keep things digitally.
Yeah, they really don't make that very easy.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I've ever had a huge problem with it, but like Mario Kart, perfect example, is like I want that one digitally, and it kind of bugs me that it's the same price digitally and physically, but I just want that game always on my Switch. I don't want to have to swap out a cartridge every time I want to just jump in for a quick race. But there's other games that I do want physically, but there's I've definitely noticed that kind of trend. Every time I see, like for example, I follow Lizard Cube, who did Wonder Boy, and they just announced a limited run games of the PS4 version. And it's just the comment section is just all, is there going to be a physical release for Switch? Is there a physical release for Switch? Or right. Have you seen like the Cave Story physical edition that's coming out on Switch?
Yeah.
It's insanity. Like,
yeah.
It's freaking Cave Story. I'd love Cave Story, don't get me wrong, but it seems to just be Cave Story Plus, but it's got a full printed manual, and people are going nuts for it, just absolutely nuts for it. And I'm looking at it like, I'd play Cave Story again, but I'm not going to pay, like, stupid money for it. I mean, if they were going to offer that version with, say, the 3D graphics from Cave Story 3D, like just the polygonal graphics as an option, and you could switch between all three graphical presentations, maybe. But, man, every single release, like Blaster Master Zero, you go to IndieCreates' page and look around when Blaster Master Zero came out, like, where's the physical release? I need a physical release for Switch and 3DS. And, like, okay, like, if I'm looking at you people like you're crazy, then you know there's something wrong.
Yeah, no, we definitely notice that Nintendo fans want their physical releases, and you know, I'm not sure what that is. I don't know if it's a demographics thing. You know, the Nintendo fans tend to skew a little bit older when it comes to collectors, and we remember the NES days, and we want those things. Mm-hmm. Or maybe because Nintendo products are so collectible that even things from a few years ago are like Fire Emblem on the Wii is worth a ton of money.
My God, you're right.
Kirby on the Wii, like, yeah,
that's still like pissed about that game. One I wanted that game when it came out. I just didn't get around to buying it. I had no idea it was going to shoot up in freaking value. It's Kirby,
right? Who really cares, right? That much is that game, like, worth a lot of money?
Yeah,
it's like what, a, it's like a $70 game now.
Yep.
So that's insanity.
That's not okay.
I mean, it's available for download on the Wii U for $20, but, well, I guess that just kind of goes right back into my brand of insanity. That one right there, I want the physical disc for that one, and I can't explain why. I could have downloaded it on the Wii U, but I want that disc for some stupid reason.
It sort of makes sense to me with like Nintendo collectors, because I suppose if you're a Nintendo collector, like if you are a Nintendo fan and that's the system that you have, you probably still have your copies of The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2 and, you know, Metroid and Super. You probably still have your physical editions of those games. So since these are kind of like legacy titles or legacy characters, you're just going to keep doing that thing that you've always done with. Does that make sense? Maybe?
Yeah, I'd like to have, I guess it kind of plays into, I'd like to put it on a shelf next to all my other Kirby games or something,
right,
along those lines.
I have, well, because like you, Chris, you just got, thanks to a friend of the show, Ferg, you just got the Zelda thing that you were missing. So
the Game Watch,
yeah. Yeah, the Game Watch. So now you can display all of that. So when a new Zelda title comes out, well, I want the physical edition so that I can display it with my thing. Whereas like somebody like me, I'm like, man, I really love The Last of Us. I don't give a shit if I have that physical. Like, that could not matter any less to me. In fact, I actively don't want it physically.
Like, I bought a physical copy of Breath of the Wild for Switch and Wii U.
Yes, which is in my house right now.
Yes.
I have been toying with the idea of picking up the Wii U copy just to have both.
It's going
to
be worth money, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little piece of fear with me. Although, I don't know if it's going to go the same route as Twilight Princess did, because there are a lot of people that would argue that the GameCube version of Twilight Princess was superior to the Wii version. And, you know, I get that.
And
you know, it was
they would all be
left-handed
right.
Link for the people who really care about that. And there was no motion controls in it, but it also wasn't in widescreen, and it didn't feature the IR aiming, which I think is phenomenal. So,
but it did have the map orientation in the right direction. You know,
yes.
And that flipped the whole thing.
Yes.
So it lined up with the Ocarina of Time world map.
The Wii U version of the game of Breath of the Wild, it's not that different from the Switch version, besides, I believe, some longer loading times, and that's pretty much it.
But that's what we want.
We want longer loading times.
Isn't that because it's loading a better game? That's how that works, right? It's loading.
Yes, that's
it's loading more stuff for me to do.
So when you pop in Blood Omen Legacy of Kain on your PS1, all that waiting time, you know, is going to be worth it.
You know, like, it's loading not only Blood Omen, but it's also loading some other IDOS bullshit that you never wanted. It's loading Fighting Force or whatever.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's loading up Fighting Force.
Or Fighting
just
Vipers or whatever other nonsense. Ugh.
Oh, boy. They made a sequel to Fighting Force, man.
I know.
Who wanted that?
They, to be fair, like, there was a sequel to damn near everything but Blasto. I think, like, Blasto is the only game in history that does not have a sequel.
Oh my God, Blasto.
Blasto was awesome.
It was awesome.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it Phil Hartman?
Phil Hartman was awesome. There you go.
There you go.
Corrected my statement. Awesome. Phil Hartman was awesome.
Anyway, so, now, in your store, because I have never ventured down to your store, but it sounds like exactly the sort of place that I should avoid, mostly because it's like, hey, everything that I love all in one convenient place. Yeah, let's not go there because I have children.
Yeah, actually, that keeps me from filling my house with stuff because it's in my store.
Yeah, oh, so, man, that's a good idea. I should talk to my wife. Honey, we should open a beer store so that I could just have beer there and not in the house.
Yeah, so like we do have a lot of cool stuff. I think we have a lot of cool stuff. It changes from day to day though, like what we have in, you know, sometimes, you know, Chris can attest to this, like our shelves will be bare. You know, we'll have like a copy of like Tennis for the NES and like a lone Tetris copy. And then other times, you know, we have more games than we can fit in the cases, and it's often feast or famine.
That's pretty awesome. Like, now, so was it like distributor problems that, or maybe not problems, but issues anyway, that caused you to want to, like, because I'm kind of getting the feeling that you're like focusing a little bit more on retro stuff now? Like, or was that always part of the plan, or?
Oh, yeah, we started with retro stuff too. Mm-hmm. But
I remember when your store opened. My friend Evan and I went over to your store not long after it opened, when you guys were out by the, was that a Pep Boys or a Goodyear or whatever?
Yeah, it was Pep Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
The store was small. It was really cool, though, because my partner on the website, Evan and I, years and years and years ago, we wanted to open up a comic and video game store ourselves. And I heard that you guys had done it, so we wanted to look at your store and see how you guys did it.
So we were going to go steal from you.
Yeah. I look back on those days and I'm like, oh, we had no idea what we were doing.
But you guys are still around. I mean, and that's awesome that you guys are still, you're still doing it. You're still around, and you seem to have really gotten, you know, wrapped your head around it, because I really do enjoy coming to your store and, you know, looking at the stuff and just asking what's new, what kind of trade-ins have you gotten. What was it that made you really want to get into this in the first place? Like, because, I mean, if I remember correctly, Farpoint, is that at Farpoint? Fairpoint? What is it? Toys? Mm-hmm. Are they, they weren't involved in the first location, right? That was a partnership that developed later?
Yeah, yeah. They didn't. They came in later on. But what made me want to do this in the first place was believe it or not, I don't know if you remember a store called Microplay.
I do remember Microplay. I bought my first copy of Kid Icarus. I got my first Rob the Robot from there, as well as Lemmings for Super NES.
Beautiful. Yeah, exactly. I have very fond memories of Microplay.
Oh,
and
me too.
I remember coming in there and getting so much stuff. Like, I actually rented a Japanese Nintendo 64 from them
before
it came out in America with a copy of Super Mario 64. And my friend and I sat down one weekend and tried to figure out like what the hell we were supposed to do in this game because all the text was in Japanese. But I loved that place, and I loved going in there and discovering like what was new and talking to the people behind the counter. And then, you know, later on, Funko Land had opened up in our area, and it was the same kind of experience. And then I went to work for EB Games in, let's say it was like 2003. Like, I was in college and I needed a part-time job. So I worked at Suncoast in the mall. And then it was,
Dan and Suncoast? I both worked at that Suncoast as well. Oh, wait, amazing. No, Dan, you didn't work there.
No, that I worked at that Suncoast. That is where we pulled you from.
Yeah, that's
Chris.
Right. Yeah. I was at that Suncoast. Dan was working at Prince Plus.
That's right. I was managing Prince Plus after working there for 2 weeks. Because the other people that I worked with got hurt and had a kid. And then I was there and they were like, all right, you're in charge. I went, oh, that's a bad fucking idea. this isn't going to work out well for any of us, but okay, let's do it.
So yeah, from there, like, when I worked at, EB Games, was at EBX at the time. And, my partner Greg was the manager, and we got to talking about it, and we're like, you know, we could do this. We should do this. And
that's where I recognize you guys from.
We've been doing this a long time. I actually don't like to think about how long it's been. you know, like when the PlayStation was still a viable console. But yeah, like, we love what we do. We love talking about video games. We love playing video games. And we had a shared love of comics and, you know, nerdy stuff, like, as so many people do. And, you know, like, why not do that for a living? So that was really what kicked it off. And I had an opportunity around 2007. I had been working at the GameStop in Summers Point, and basically getting underpaid. They had me working as an assistant manager, but they refused to promote me, and they refused to give the store a store manager.
Not so we GameStop.
I know. And so we were working without a manager, and we had like this crazy holiday season where it was me and like some part-timers, and it was the day after Christmas, which is the worst retail day for anyone who's not familiar with it. It is hell. It's worse than Black Friday because no one's happy and everyone's returning everything. Have anything because it's Christmas just happened. So you're sold out of everything, and it's awful.
It used to be RF Switch Day back in the day. Like, that was the day when everyone came in and said, I don't have AV connections on my TV. I need an RF switch.
Well, it was so like that day. I'll never forget it because I had a line of people to the back of the store, and it wasn't a huge store, but it was a line of people, and it was past closing. It was like 5 minutes past when we were supposed to close the door. And this person came up to the counter and they had a PSP. It was a defective PSP. And they were like, yeah, I want my money back for this. And I looked at the receipt and they had bought it 6 months ago and they didn't have a warranty. And I was just like, I quit. have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen Clerks? Are you familiar with the scene?
Yeah.
With the Chuli's rep? Uh-huh. He's got everybody chanting cancer merchant. Well, this guy, like, I basically said, I'm sorry, I don't have any PSPs. I can't do anything for you. You don't have a warranty. And this guy whipped up the entire store full of people waiting to return things.
Oh, my God.
To, like, yell at me. And, like, I had a store full of people yelling at me to return this guy's PSP. And I was like, I definitely quit. I'm done. So I left, and Greg and I wrote a business plan together, got some funding, and opened up later that year.
That's awesome.
That's a fantastic story. Yeah, Dan and I have plenty of experience in the GameStop. We were – I mean, I managed that Funko Land after a while right before
– The Maze Landing one?
The Maze Landing one, yeah.
No kidding.
I started there when I was 15, actually. The manager was a guy named Steve who hired me before he was supposed to because he just liked me. and had a lot of good times with him.
Let's be honest, Chris. It's because you wouldn't leave. Like it's.
That's why Greg hired me.
I would basically just, he had this binder that was his game collection, and I was just fascinated by it, and I would just sit and learn from Steve about collecting games and you know, how to look for deals and how to organize your stuff. And he was fascinated by the fact that I was so fascinated by it. And I've, you know, climbed the ranks in Funko Land, the GameStop buyout happened and things got real nasty real quick. Then I went to Suncoast. Yeah. Then I met Dan, and my life has been a living hell ever since.
That's right, baby. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time. No, I also worked at that Maze Landing GameStop, and some things happened at that store. It was a wonderful experience while in college to have people show up. I think I've told this this little story before on the show, but like. One day a dude showed up and it was like when Fight Night Round 2 came out or something like that. And he showed up to the store with like 25 unopened copies. He was like, I got these all for my birthday. I trade them in for cash. I was like, get the fuck out, dude. Like, no, not even a little bit.
Those are my favorite customers.
You got 25 copies, like 25 people in your life don't care about you enough to think anything other than, Jim likes boxing. Like, really? Get out of here, dude. This is insane. No.
Were you guys there in 1998?
No, I didn't work there until early 2000s, I think.
I was there for Ocarina of Time. So, yeah. I must have been there in 98.
Oh, no kidding, man. So, like, I almost certainly saw you. I remember I bought my copy of Final Fantasy VII there. That's amazing.
Entirely probable that you saw me there. I remember I wasn't working there when Final Fantasy VII launched. I know that because I got my place. Wait, was I? I got my PlayStation elsewhere. I didn't buy my PlayStation at that Funko Land. I wound up getting it from Wes over at EBX, actually. Because I went in there and I was one of those diehard Nintendo idiots that just wouldn't buy anything that wasn't a Nintendo product. But Final Fantasy was starting to convince me. But more than that, Castlevania Symphony of the Night was there. Oh, yeah. And I was a huge Castlevania fan. So I went to Wes and I said, I've convinced myself to buy a PlayStation. Should I get Symphony of the Night or Final Fantasy VII? And he said, hands down, Symphony of the Night. And he was so right about that. But I must have started it. I must have started there. It was 98. Man, I'm bad at math and bad at my years, but I know I was working at Funko for the Ocarina launch because I just remember being behind the counter. All right, yeah. So I must have started working there like middle of the year. Good times.
That's awesome.
Loved that place. So cool. I loved that Funko Land, man. Me too. The newspapers and collecting. Yeah. Like, that's that wall of NES games. And I loved doing the counts every night. I looked forward to doing the counts every night because I'd just get to flip through all the games we had. And I just knew from doing the counts every night what our inventory was. And having that as just drawers of instruction manuals and using that weird cleaning foam to clean off the systems and stuff. I loved that place. And freaking Chuck Simmons, the owner of Funko Land, that guy was out of his freaking gourd. And I was so heartbroken when GameStop bought out Funko Land because it just lost all of its soul.
Yeah. So I got to run. My store is closing now. I'm at my store. I'm in the back room right now. And I just heard the rumble of the gate, so I better go out and do the closing thing. But it was really great to be on this with you guys.
Awesome. I mean, it was really great talking to you. Nice to kind of reminisce about other things and whatnot. It's really interesting hearing about what it's like being a retailer in this industry right now. And it's really does kind of suck that it's so difficult for you to get new product because – you know, I'm all about supporting local businesses, and obviously if I could buy any and all new product from you guys over any other place, I would. And it's just a shame that the way the industry works right now, it's not really built around people being able to do that. And
definitely not.
But thank Jeebus that Marvel and DC continue to put out summer events. I mean, that's got to be just such, like, every year it has to be just another, like, I can't believe they're doing it again. We have hit yet another watershed moment here. Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what we were going to do.
Praise our publishing overlords.
Praise be.
All right, we're gonna we'll let you go, Sean. Remember, if X-Men Gold comes in, you got a reprint of X-Men Gold number one. Toss it in my bin.
I will.
And other than that, yeah, thanks for joining. We'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Great, thanks, guys.
Later, man.
No problem. Bye. All right, and with that, Dan and I are going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some current goings-on in the world of the video game industry. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com, so stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com. First up, in the latest episode of our gaming podcast, Dave and Jengus review Among the Hit, talk about upcoming product launches, and weigh in on the new banned/restricted lists. After that, our heroes discuss the latest of the large unearthed arcana drops and speculate about a 6th edition of D&D, as well as the new deck-building D&D game. Finally, the guys talk about some of their favorite CCGs outside the realm of MTG. If you understood any or all of that, unlike me, don't miss You Shall Not Pass Go, episode 15, New Card Smell.
Those guys, they are in deep. Mm-hmm. They are entrenched.
Bless them.
And I bless them. God bless them. I'm not the type of guy that says God bless them, but God bless them. Next, Chris, I don't know if you've realized, and I don't know how you would have realized considering the weather, winter.
Well, I realized because I still hang up my old 1980s or early 90s Nintendo calendars, so I'm always aware when the month changes.
It's the most charmingly nerdy thing about you, I think, is that you're like, whatever.
Need the dates to be correct.
No, because it doesn't matter. It's arbitrary. Time doesn't exist. It's all wibbly wobbly. Anyway. So, well, then you must have realized that it's already May, which means it's almost time to roll down the windows and crank up the tunes. But what should you listen to apart from Rancid and Weezer?
You should listen to David Wise's Snake Pass soundtrack, because it's really good.
That too. So, Weezer, Rancid, David Wise's Snake Pass soundtrack, the new hot release from One Pedaled Bike 923... the Foursquare demo. Geekade's music writer Janelle Hawk has the answer, apart from those other things. In her latest post, she tells us about all the new releases from At the Drive-In, which is awesome that they have a new record out, Paramore, Rascal Flatts, and Lana Del Rey, among others. Find out what you'll be listening to all summer long and turn it up. New releases for May 2017, located in the FinTech.
It's funny, because we were just talking about all that D&D and collectible card game stuff that I don't understand. I feel the same way when I'm reading her articles about music.
Yeah, no, I do too. Like, I have hit an age where I'm like, no, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm excited.
She's talking about all these things. She goes into detail about why we should care, and I'm like, she's like, oh, these guys are back. I'm like, they were here before?
They existed? Like, I am super excited that there's a new At the Drive-In record, because that was something that existed 15 years ago when I still cared about new music. So, you know, there you have it. Anyway, do we have a Spotify playlist to link to that? Because if not, we should.
We should. We should. We should get in on the Spotify.
Somebody do that
business, right? Yes.
Get the
somebody
web
take care
on
of
that
business. Anyway, have you seen the FX show Fargo that's set in the same world as the 1996 movie of the same name, but isn't about any of the same characters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chip Garrison takes a look at the threads that connect each season of the anthology series and the film that inspired it. Oofda. Should you check out Welcome to the FCU, the Fargo Cinematic Universe? You'll betcha.
You'll betcha.
You'll betcha. Fun fact, my wife wrote the script this week that we used on this week's episode, which I just copy-pasted to use tonight.
Because you're lazy.
And when she read that commercial on this week's episode, she did the whole thing with a Minnesota accent.
Did she?
She did. And me and Evan, we didn't see it coming.
Were you more or less attracted to her when she was done?
Well, we were laughing pretty hard, so...
Oh, there you go.
I'm going to say about the same.
That's... Well, no change. You're married with two kids. That shit ain't changing anytime soon. That shit is what it is. It is fucking even keel from now until death.
She got a new haircut and she looks pretty spectacular.
Yeah, good for her.
I'll say that. Right. So I'll say I am moderately more attracted to her today, but it was less because of the Minnesota accent and more because of the awesome haircut.
I am moderately more attracted. Oh, it's a good thing she doesn't listen to this show. Finally.
She's like right back there. She can probably hear me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that shit's over for you tonight, sir. Court-martial in the private. Finally, Earth Day just recently passed, and that got Dawn Blake thinking about the intersections between her geeky passions and the environment. Read all about how she inspired her students to reduce, reuse, and recycle, while also exposing them to an excellent animated classic. Find out more in Anime and the Environment, Princess Mononoke. Is that how you say it? I've never known.
I think it is.
Okay.
Because today is Earth Day, and every day is Earth Day.
Princess Mononoke. I feel like if you just kind of put it all together, Mononoke. It's fine.
Mononoke. That was a callback to Beavis and Butthead, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Very first one. Anyway, Karen just texted me. She says, "You jerks talking about me?"
No.
To which I say, you can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com. Back.
In jokes, the best kind of thing to share on a podcast with other people.
Back we are. We have returned.
Oh,
and
I just edited the script. I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me fix that. There you go. Take that cue out.
So we didn't really plan anything for this second half.
No.
We're awesome at our job. So we're going to talk about a little bit of the thing, some of the things that have been popping up in the news lately.
See now, Chris, you say job. And
yeah,
as far as
we
I
get
know,
paid in love and affection.
Very few of us are getting paid, whether it be in love and or affection, from them.
Get paid in self-satisfaction. And that's our show. No, I'm just kidding.
Fuck off.
So before we get, this one actually just popped up right before the show started. There is a Kickstarter live for an Eskimo Bob NES game. I was surprised to find that Dan doesn't know about Eskimo Bob.
I don't. There are certain things that have escaped my purview. Very few, but Eskimo Bob is one of them.
I recently looked back at Eskimo Bob, and it does not hold up.
And it's is it like Johnny Chimpo from Super Troopers? Is it that sort of...
You know what, this is a Flash cartoon that was on the internet back when Flash cartoons were a thing. So this is like around when Homestar Runner was really popular. It was around when Don Hertzfeldt's Rejected came out.
Which
kind of put you in the mindset of just like a bunch of weird animation showing up on the internet. You know, back when Flash animation was a thing.
I am currently looking at it, and I have never seen it.
It's kind of funny. It doesn't hold up extraordinarily well, but it was relatively amusing at the time.
Uh-huh.
So the co-creator of Eskimo Bob said he always wanted it to be a Nintendo game, so he's freaking making one. It looks pretty cute. I might actually jump in on that. I don't know what the tiers are or anything. I haven't looked into it in the least. Let's see. There's a $10 gratitude download pack. We'll get the PC version of the game. $45 or more will get you the NES cartridge. All right, that's not terrible for a brand new NES game.
No, that's too much. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's 30 seems right there.
Cartridge with box and manual is 55. Wow.
Ooh. It's a nice-looking cart. Like, it's white.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I do wish it was, like, classic gray, because then it would match the other ones. But I wouldn't even be... If I were to jump in on this, I would, you know, obviously go the $55 route. And that's Canadian $55.
Mm.
Oh, so the $45 thing I said was actually $33. So
yeah, that's about right then. Yeah. That seems good.
And for the box and manual, it's only $40.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. For a brand new NES cart with a box and manual, that's not a bad plan. I might think about that.
Well, because what's kind of cool about these Kickstarters for like NES games is that it almost doesn't matter if the game is any good. Like, it really doesn't. It's the simple fact that there is a new NES cart that will have a box and a manual and the whole experience. It really doesn't matter. Because I don't know what the hell I'm looking at with these images here. Like, it looks like an NES game, and I'm sure are references to the cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I do want to save Earth from a Martian invasion.
Don't we all?
Which I suppose
this did just start today. Wow, nearly 50% funded in its first 24 hours. Really?
That's pretty awesome.
Oh, shit. This is actually really close to being funded. I didn't even realize that. It's only got 72 backers, but it's raised $4,233 of its $5,105 goal. Because I was just thinking, like, yeah, maybe I won't back it because it's probably not going to get funded. But I'm wrong.
It is less than $100 away with 28 days to go.
You mean less than $1,000?
Less than $1,000. I'm bad at math as well. Apparently. Less than $1,000.
Good one, Dean.
That's still pretty impressive, though, for like it being up for a day or two, right? Is this today?
A day. It was today. Yeah, today's the 10th.
So, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Just I have to throw this out there. I have to mention this. Dan, you posted on Facebook your 3 years ago memory of finishing your first podcast with me and Dean.
Yeah, it was like episode 3 of the show or something like that.
And Michael Musilo?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Lord Helmet.
Wow, I can't believe I've been listening to you guys for that long. Felt like it's been only 297 minus 291 episodes.
Fabulous. Bravo, Lord Bravo. Helmet, fan of the month,
and then yeah,
he's not wrong.
That's just he's not wrong. That will forever be one of my favorite moments to ever be on this show.
It is that too, but this is our. We should have done something for our 3 year anniversary, right?
What
should we have done something for our 3 year anniversary?
Is this our 3 year anniversary?
Well, like if 3 years ago we recorded the first episode with me on it, that would be our 3 year anniversary.
Yeah, I guess. Happy 3 year anniversary, Dan.
What do you get for someone's 3 year anniversary? Is it paper? Plastic?
I don't know. Paper, plastic, fries.
Get me a box of wine.
I'll hit up Trader Joe's, get you a box of wine.
Ooh, that sounds good. That sounds nice.
So anyways. Eskimo Bob is coming out for the NES. I'm blown away by that. So let's see what else we got. There's definitely some other news to talk about, but
well, we didn't cover the discontinuation, the official discontinuation of the NES Classic.
I feel like were you not on an episode recently?
I wasn't.
Because I feel like that
you and
was
I
when
talk
we talked about
it.
The two of us didn't talk about it. Well,
yeah.
I've definitely made my thoughts on it relatively clear.
What were your thoughts? Because I don't listen when I'm not.
Well, I wrote a whole article about it on the Stone Age Gamer blog.
read our shit, Chris. I'm part of it. I read other people's shit.
I mean, my thoughts really boil down to, well, that was dumb. That's pretty much it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I kind
of
like...
What are your thoughts on that?
I don't understand why Nintendo doesn't want money.
Yeah, this is like, this thing is a license to print money. At least at the time, for the time being. Like, it's not an evergreen product. This isn't probably going to last forever.
No, sure.
How in the world they did not ride that wave?
That's the part I don't get. Because obviously, I mean, there has to be SNES Classic coming out at some point, whether it's this holiday season or the next. But this is something, I mean, sure, maybe they didn't expect it was going to be as big a success as it was, but, you know, it is. So make some money while you're at it. You know, make that a 2-year cycle. You could have done another year of NES Classic. It would have been just as hot this holiday season. Then next year you could have hit SNES Classic, done that for 2 years. You could have done a 64. Well, maybe, I don't know. People might not want that one. But I mean, you had
Mario Kart 64, Mario 64. There's some market for that kind of
stuff. I don't know. It's just I found it very surprising that they pulled the plug on it so early. But it is, your point is always valid, Chris. You never know.
You can't predict
what the hell Nintendo is going to do. They could very well. We could wake up tomorrow, and they could have sold to Tecmo. Be like, what? How the fuck? Really? Yeah. Like, and they're just going back to making playing cards. They're out.
That's what they're going to do now.
They're out of the video game business.
Yeah, we talked about this on episode 146, Return of the Vest.
Speaking of
not being able to predict Nintendo,
that's kind of crazy.
They announced the new Nintendo 2DS XL. What?
New Nintendo 2DS.
So, it seems like their thought process behind this, I think this was in an interview with Reggie, that there's the amazing Technicolor Cheese Wedge, which is the 2DS.
Right.
And they're like, well, that's your entry level, like, dirt cheap entry level into video games.
Which is great. It's great for kids.
It's cute.
Yeah.
It's kind of bulky, but whatever.
But sure, kids have small hands. They need a big thing to hold.
Then they have the new 3DS.
Kids have presidential hand.
Yes, they do. Then you have the new 3DS, which is, I believe, referred to as the Cadillac of handheld gaming systems, which, sure, the Switch came out, but whatever.
Sure.
And then there's, like, nothing in between, at least currently on the market. So I guess this fills that niche. Need to be something in between?
Well, but this is it. Because, like, I mean, if you remember back in the way back, it wasn't that long ago, but you remember like the video of Reggie and like a bunch of Nintendo fanboys like throwing their 3D glasses in the air of like, yeah, we never need these again. And then like Nintendo, like a week later, was the last time they mentioned glasses-free 3D. Like that has not been a selling point of the 3DS in years.
No, it hasn't, and most everyone plays with it off, and I get why they would take that out,
right.
I suppose.
But it's expensive, but
they did that already with the 2DS.
Right, but the 2DS isn't, like, if you had people that had a 3DS and didn't have the 3DS XL with the little nubby thing, and you were looking to get them to upgrade, the 2DS was not the thing they were going to upgrade to.
No, but I mean, the new 3DS or new 3DS XL, that would be what you would want them to upgrade to.
Well, but they
But now you've just gotten, you've gotten this at a slightly lower price point, but...
But they can manufacture it cheaper, because...
Yeah, they can. I don't know, the whole thing's weird.
It's weird. It's, by the way, 3-year anniversary, you should have gotten me something leather. That's
leather?
The traditional. Yeah.
Keep your eyes on your mailbox.
I certainly got used to them.
All right, so the new 3DS XL. Yeah, the new 3DS XL seems to retail MSRP for $199. Mm-hmm. The new 2DS XL, how much is this going to MSRP for? $149.
That's not insignificant.
That's not insignificant. That's a
system and a game for the same price as the old system. Plus, it's got blue buttons.
It does look nice. Like, I won't lie. I really like the look of this system. I think it's really, really nice looking. I love this design. I'm just slightly baffled by its existence. Because I didn't see this coming. I just did not see them releasing with the production problems that they're having, mm-hmm. where they already have a literal bouquet of DS iterations floating around. They could not keep up with the demand for the NES Classic Edition, and they cannot keep up with demand for the Switch.
But they're going to make this thing.
I am baffled by this decision. And obviously I'm glad that they are still continuing to support the 3DS line for a little while instead of just dropping it like it's hot because their new system is out, because that doesn't do justice to the people that still have the old systems and want to keep doing new things.
Right. And
Nintendo has fallen in a bad habit of not supporting their older hardware when new hardware comes out. So this, I'm glad to see this kind of existing, but I am all for the single future of the Switch. Like, I am all for them not having a different dedicated handheld and home console. I'm all for the Switch being their one thing going forward. So anything that kind of gets in the way of that makes me feel a little uneasy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who the hell knows? This thing could sell incredibly well. The 3DS and 2DS had a great year last year.
This is going to outsell the Switch.
Yeah, you think?
Yep, this is going to be the one. They're going to be like, well, fuck it, we're not making the Switch anymore.
The Switch is doing pretty well.
No, I don't think this is going to outsell the Switch. This will be quite successful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think this is going to do pretty well for itself. The 150 price point is pretty nice. The huge library of 3DS games that are out there. Obviously, they still have the new... They still have the issue of people wondering... Every retailer is going to be asked, well, do 3DS games play on the 2DS?
Yep.
And I think that's still going to be a problem, as it always has been. But that's easy enough to get around, I suppose. I wanted to just kind of segue over to the fact that I was wanted to point out that I was definitely wrong about the Switch not selling more than the Wii U, because I think at this point, if it doesn't sell more than the Wii U, that's gonna be the real challenge at this point, because it's already selling pretty well. I mean, even if it fucking tanks going forward, it still would have a problem not outselling the Wii U. So,
yeah, no, it's.
I was definitely wrong there, and I'm glad to be wrong. Absolutely. I'm just surprised.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I guess segueing into other news, there's been some more rumblings about third party stuff. Third parties are starting to pique a little bit more interest in Switch, which I think is neat. Everyone's obviously been taking that wait and see approach, but now it seems like EA is talking about what other games can they bring to the platform besides FIFA and Ubisoft. There's been a few more rumblings on the. I don't get this. Is another one I don't get, because if this is real, I'm just friggin' confused. There's a Rabbids Mario crossover thing that's been rumored for ages.
Why not?
Does anyone want this?
No. Well, I mean, I certainly don't, but the hell do I know? I mean...
It's true.
I can't imagine this selling very well. And, like, that's... What scares me about them doing stuff like that is, you know, I've said it time and again on the show, I want a healthy Nintendo. Like, I want a healthy Microsoft. Competition is good for everybody. Putting out a thing like Mario Cross Rabbids or whatever the hell they're going to call it If that doesn't sell, then you have a big deal publisher like Ubisoft go, I don't know, man. Maybe this isn't the thing. And then
is that cartoon still on?
Maybe.
Like, the Rabbids had a cartoon and whatnot.
Dude, like, my kids are about to turn 8 in, like, 2 weeks. And they are into everything. They know and talk to me about everything. I've never heard them mention. I've heard them mention some, like, old weird shit. Like, my daughter asked me about, like, Gotcha Man the other day. What the fuck? Why do you know about that? Like, saw a video on YouTube. Fuck, this looks cool. They've never mentioned the Rabbids. Ever. So
it's weird.
The barometer of my own children would seem to say that no, nobody wants that thing.
Because, like, you can't just stick Mario on anything and make it sell. Because, I mean, look at Fortune Street for the Wii. Like, Fortune Street was freaking cool, but it was a basically Monopoly with Dragon Quest and Mario characters in it. And
I've never even heard of that.
Really, it's pretty weird. It's a fun game. I wish I had it. But that didn't sell very well, because who wants that? And a Rabbids Mario crossover? I don't even know what kind of game would that be. Now, if it's some sort of, like,
platformer,
interesting adventure game,
yeah,
like, if it is interesting and fun, like a cross between a Mario platformer and that Rabbids Go Home game that was pretty good, that would be interesting. But if it's like the Raving Rabbids games, that it's just a collection of mini games,
right?
Which is
probably what it would be.
It's probably what it's going to be, which makes me sad, because I dig the Rabbids design. Once they kind of evened them out a little bit, like the original one, there was like all these different colors and shapes and whatnot. And once they kind of made them a bit more uniform and kind of adjusted their comedy, those things were the Minions before the Minions happened. Like,
yeah,
that was the exact comedy. And then the Minions took off and the Rabbids didn't so much. I mean, they did, obviously. The game sold tons of copies.
Sure.
And they had a friggin' cartoon made out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is another one that's kind of confusing to me. If it does... I actually didn't even think about that until just now, that Rabbids Go Home was a pretty interesting and fun game where the rabbits were trying to get home to the moon and they had a shopping cart and... You know, it wasn't a perfect game, but it had a lot of, like, neat gameplay concepts to it. Mm-hmm. And there's definite potential with the Rabbids. And just seeing them, like, now I'm just imagining what a world looks like where Waluigi runs into a rabbit. and I'm all of a sudden sold on this game. So I don't know. What do I know?
Oh, goodness. I mean, that's the kind of thing I worry about, you know, like. You put out something like this, it doesn't sell, and then you pull more third-party support, and then we're back to, like,
we're back in the Wii U.
Only Nintendo games.
Well, granted, this is Ubisoft, and they have a tendency to not pull out too fast.
That's
like,
true.
They stick around for a bit.
And they do.
Even if they make shitty decisions, like making Rayman multi-platform and literally putting the completed version of the Wii U game on a shelf so that it can release at the same time as the other ones, and then still have the Wii U version outsell the other ones. That wasn't a great business decision, guys. That kind of hurt everyone involved. But I don't know. And I'd still like to know if this Beyond Good and Evil 2 rumor is going to hold water. Because that was pretty heavily rumored before the Switch launched. And nobody's mentioned anything about it since.
Yeah.
Speaking of rumors, there's also been a lot of rumors coming out of Retro lately that they might be working on new Metroid. I think they hired a game composer that's making people think that. I don't really know where the story's coming from, because I can't look at most game-related news at work anymore because it's all blocked.
They have to. At this point, like, Nintendo needs wins. They need...
Nintendo needs wins. I just want Retro to do something that they haven't done before. I think Retro is a crazy talented studio, and I want to see them do something they haven't done. I don't want to see them fall back on Metroid. That'd be like Naughty Dog be like, well, we're going to make a new Jak and Daxter game. It's like, okay, so well, that's cool, that. But...
I would be so in. You're right, but look at what happened the last time somebody other than Retro made a Metroid game.
Well, the last two times.
The last two times. Retro's making the next Metroid game. That's that.
Well, but the time before, like, Retro didn't make Metroid Fusion. No, and Metroid true. Fusion was freaking awesome. And
give it to AM2R. Give it to him. He's good.
Yeah. Just make AM2R. Make that real. Make that, that's all we need. Make an official version of that. I would buy it. I would pay money for that game. I'd buy a physical version.
On that note, Chris, we are now struggling for content. Put a pin in it.
And when we're struggling to stay awake and really, I want to play more Zelda. Here's, you know what's, this is crazy, okay? So I have now put over 90 hours into Zelda.
That's quite a few.
I've had the Master Sword for a while. And on the loading screen, they do these little hints. They just kind of, not hints, they just like tell you things about the game while the loading screen is there. And I learned something completely, I had no idea. If you have full health and you have the Master Sword, you can shoot the little laser beams out of it.
Oh, yeah?
I had no clue that you could do that.
Okay.
Completely baffled by this. Just, what the shit? I could have been doing that this whole time. I was damn near angry with myself. I found, this is just such a fun story, and this is just a great example of the kind of shit that you run into in this game. So, I found a shrine, and it was in the desert, and I just saw it out in the distance, because my son likes me to look at the divine beasts in the game. He just thinks they're really cool looking, so I go and I warp to all of them and look at them, and he's happy. So, we warped to the camel one in the desert.
And then run away from them, because I'm not ready.
Oh, I've done all the divine beasts. They're done.
Oh, that's right.
All four divine beasts, they're behind me now. And so I walked out to the camel, and I just looked around, and I flipped the camera around, and I saw, oh, shit, there's something orange in the distance. Holy crap, there's just a shrine sitting there in the middle of the desert. How did I not notice this before? So I go out to the shrine, and then I get within close enough distance to see the shrine itself, and then I turn off my game. So I go to play it yesterday. And I'm like, all right, John, I found this shrine. Do you want to do the shrine? And he's like, yeah, because he loves doing shrines with me. So I turn on the game. I walk over to shrine. I go to put my Sheikah Slate on the little opening thing that opens up the door. But there's a woman passed out on it. There's just this Gerudo woman just holding on to it completely in my way. So I'm like, excuse me, what the shit? And she's just like, I'm so thirsty. I found this shrine, but I'm going to die. I'm so thirsty. I need this specific drink. I'm like, this specific drink? Okay, so I head back to Gerudo Town because I thought I remembered seeing a bar. And I figured if anyone's going to tell me something about a beverage, it might be the people at the bar. So the woman behind the bar, she's just like, oh, that chick? She's our best customer. She's a freaking alcoholic. This woman is passed out in the middle of the desert and she wants an alcoholic beverage. She doesn't want water. She wants a specific alcoholic drink.
She's not wrong.
So the woman behind the counter is just like, all right, well, I mean, you can take the drink to her, but I need all this ice to make the drink. It's Gerudo Village is in the middle of the fucking desert. So she's like, there's this place where we keep ice underground, but you got to go to it, get the ice. You bring it back to the front of this temple. I'll meet you halfway. Then I'll make the drink and you can tell her about it. So I go out there to get the ice. But then when I'm carrying the ice back, I'm like, shit, I'm in the fucking desert and the sun is melting the ice as I'm carrying it. So I'm like, I'm walking in the shadows of all these ruins. And so, like, after a second of that, I'm like, all right, screw this. I'm going to do this at night. So I set up a campfire. I waited till night. I woke up, picked back up my ice block. And then there's these fucking monsters camping out all over the place at night. They just come over there and camp at night. And so I walk over to one and they break my ice cube. And I'm like, fuck you. So I go back to get the ice cube again. And the woman who's running the place is asleep. And she's just like, come back in the morning. I'm not getting out of bed. I'm like, fuck. So I go back out, sit in front of my campfire, say, wait until morning. She gets out of bed. I get the new thing of ice. There's all these like fire monsters around shooting all these fireballs at me. Melt the ice thing again. I'm like, fuck. Go back. Get kill every single one of those motherfuckers, go back, get the ice, hide in the shadows, make it over to the woman. She goes like, all right, I got the ice. I'll make the drink for you. She goes back to town. I walk all the way back out to Shrine because you can't warp to it because I couldn't activate it because this woman wouldn't get off the freaking activation thing because she wanted a drink so bad. As soon as I tell her that the woman's willing to make her a drink, she perks up like it's her fucking job and fucking on foot bolts through the desert straight back to town. This woman's commitment to alcoholism was impressive. I love this game. I love it so much. I'm still playing it every day, and I've had it since launch. I'm still playing it every day, and I still find it fun. It's ridiculous. I keep finding shit wrong. Like that. Wait till you find when you play this game, wait till you find the woman in the middle, like on the beach, that is in love with a ball. Like, actually in love with a glowing orb that you need to somehow convince her to give you.
That is bad.
Quite fabulous. All right. So that's it. That's going to be our show. Join us next week when we're going to be doing another trivia episode with special guests, our former SAG co-host Tiff Ryan, as well as the host of the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, the one and only Ferg. Those two will be pairing off against Dan, and I have some very fun, ridiculous games for them to play.
Oh, good. I'll embarrass myself again. That'll be fucking awesome. So excited.
You lost to Dean, man.
Not only did I lose, but Square Painter lost, too.
And that's not okay.
That probably lost him business, I hope.
You lost to Dean on the Stone Age Gamer podcast? I'm not buying this shit.
I'm going to Circle Paint.
He just uses bingo daughter.
Fucking pointillism bullshit. Get out of here. Look, but when you get close to it, it's like a whole bunch of dots put together. So shut up. Don't even again, get me started on pointillism, Chris. Don't even.
Wouldn't dream of it. But you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram @Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter @the_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm @GeekadeChris, that's Geekade, K-R-I-S, and you can find Dan at
Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd also like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have a link to again in the show notes. Always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com, where we post something new every single day. A big thank you again to Sean Rothwell of Level Up Entertainment for coming on to the show and just running a pretty darn cool video game store. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.